is Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is
True Crime New England.
What's up, everybody?
Hello, welcome back.
We are so excited to have you here on episode 42.
I can't believe it's episode 42.
I know. It honestly is a really great way to measure time.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. And time's going by so fast. Like, we've mentioned it before, we're almost at 1 year. And when this episode comes out, it's going to be even closer. And that blows my mind.
It's so crazy to think about.
It's insane. I know you guys have been anxiously awaiting the total of our 10-episode swear jar.
Yeah, that's another good way to measure time.
Yes, it is.
Our 10-episode chunks.
Yes, it is. It definitely is. And I like it, so I think continuing it would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
To no one's surprise, the level of the F words did rise a little bit, even though my initial, you know, New Year's resolution was to stop with the F word. Enough of that. It's inappropriate. It's unprofessional. Well, actually, I did the opposite, I think, but it's okay because it's going to charity.
It's going to a good cause.
Yes. And just to remind everyone, we are donating this 10-episode batch to Bridget's House of Hope in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
A great organization. You want to just real quick give a 10-second synopsis of what they do?
Oh, yeah. So they're going to be the first house in the state of New Hampshire to house victims of human trafficking.
I love it. That's amazing. And, you know, with New England states, especially like New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, you wouldn't think that people get human trafficked, but they absolutely do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great that Bridget's House of Hope is doing that.
Yeah.
We decided to go through in each episode, count how many fucks we used and break it down between how many Katie said and, you know, the episodes, how many I did. Okay. And let me tell you that the difference between the numbers was astonishing and also quite embarrassing.
So, oh my God.
It was so bad, you guys.
Our worst.
Well,
ours a strong word.
Yeah, our, it's, don't own up to it because you didn't do anything wrong. Liz's worst episode. It's got to be the one where I said, wasn't there one where I said 13 times?
We had 13 in total.
In total, okay.
You had 10 of those. It was episode 34, for anybody that's curious.
Oh my God. Episode 34, Brian Neisenfeld. A terrible, sad story. So I did happen to say the F word 10 times. Was it warranted? Maybe some of them. All of them? Definitely not. And you had 3, so.
Our best episode was actually the last one of this batch, episode 40.
Yep.
We had none.
Total. Neither of us said the F word. So.
I was astonished.
Yes, I was too. Because it was episode 40, you said?
Yeah.
What episode was that?
That was...
I don't remember.
The suspicious death of Gregory Hart.
Oh, which one?
Both suspicious deaths.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And both in Rhode Island.
Both...
Dun, dun, dun.
It's definitely the mob. Just kidding.
The mafia.
We love the mafia. And I guess you're wondering, guys, just get to the point.
Mm.
What was the total? If you were keeping track at home, probably no one was.
I wouldn't blame you. I wouldn't either.
It's a chore. We had to really sit down and focus.
Oh my, I know. We had to go back and, because there was a point where we both had different numbers for the same episode. I was like, oh no. So we had to re-listen and reconvene, but we got there ultimately.
We did. And Katie, would you like to tell everyone the final total?
The grand total of F words we said over the course of 10 episodes was 86. Therefore, $86 will be donated between us to Bridget's House of Hope.
Yes. I'm excited. Am I embarrassed? Yes.
Well, because 56 of those were yours, Liz.
Yes, indeed.
56 out of 86 were yours.
Uh-huh. So that's really fucking sad. But hey, money goes to a really great cause.
It's all for a good cause.
And it's fun. And honestly, I think some cases do warrant some swearing, right?
I mean, the one we have that's starting off the next batch of 10.
Yeah.
We really racked them up.
Yeah. It was a scary, sad case. Mm-hmm. So, I think it was warranted. In today's episode, I'm just predicting for the future, it's probably going to be warranted too. Because this is one of the most messed up cases.
100%.
Oh, and we've had it on our list forever. It's a really good in that it's interesting and well-known. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, heartbreaking. But we wanted to reach out to you guys and ask for some suggestions.
Yeah, so if you guys happen to know of any charities, any organizations that you feel as though is worthy of some F-word money for our next batch of 10 episodes, please let us know.
Yeah, and we'd love it if they were New England-based charities.
That'd be cool.
If not, that's fine. That's pretty specific, but we would love that.
Yeah, maybe a true crime correlation would be cool, but again, no worries.
Yeah, whatever. We're good. We have a lot of passions that we could love. We'd love to support.
Sure.
You know, anything LGBTQ, anything, I mean, animal, you know, whatever. Whatever you guys think is a good cause. There is no shortage of F words to be given and money to be donated for good causes in New England.
Boom.
So I'm excited. Listen, I would much rather spend money on something charitable than my own expensive habits that we talk about
that
often.
Yes.
So.
This is true. Just, it's good karma, too.
It is.
You do something good, something good will come back to you. Yep. You're putting out good energy.
Yeah. I heard on one of the hometowns, I think it was the hometown episode that just came out of My Favorite Murder last week, and someone was like, they did something and it was nice, and she said, I'm going to paraphrase because she used a word I didn't like, but she said that she did this to rack up karma points so she can be a bitch for the rest of her life. And I really liked that because
That's so funny.
You rack up enough now. You're not going to get rid of them, you know? I think they just... You can't lose... Can you? I don't know.
I hope not.
I don't know. But either way, I'm going to be a bitch for the rest of my life. Because now I've... You know, the karma accrual.
That's so funny.
Anyways. So, today's case is... Well, in a word... Disgusting.
Really disturbing.
Yeah. It's... Like we said, it's a very well-known case, and you guys probably, from just the title alone, are familiar with it, so, you know, it's gonna be hard, but it is one of those important ones, you know? And it's very interesting, seeing how people's minds work. And without further ado, today, we will be covering...
The murder of Colleen Ritzer.
Okay, before we get into this terrifying case, let's start with our sources. As per usual, Katie, if you wouldn't mind sharing yours.
Sure. I used newsunzip.com, wbur.com, nbcnews.com, the Daily Mail, medium.com, which is always a great resource, and boston.com.
Awesome. I used CBS Boston. Queso Criminal was the website.
Cool.
NBC, Salem News, Eagle Tribune, I use News Unzip as well, ColleenRitzer.org.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then I also used, I watched the trial videos online on YouTube, and there's all of them. You can see every second of it. It's a long, long stretch of videos, but it is very interesting, so.
Cool.
Yeah, it was very helpful. I got some good information from that, so I'm excited to share it with you guys. All right, let's kick it off by starting and talking about Colleen Ritzer a little bit. If you want to just give us a little background, Katie.
Sure. So she was born on May 13th, 1989. She attended Assumption College, and then she went on to be a math teacher at Danvers High School in Danvers, Massachusetts. She was a great teacher. She was very, very kind, very well-liked.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is not common for a math teacher.
Yeah, no offense, but...
All of the math teachers I've had, yeah. I'm thinking back, I can't say that I thought of any of them as kind or well-liked.
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly because I don't like the subject of math.
And Me neither.
I feel like you have to be a certain kind of person to teach it and have it sink in somebody's head.
Right.
But it seemed like she was the kind of person to really connect with these kids.
It seems like she just knew. And on the family website, ColleenRitzer.org, her parents and her siblings talked about how she knew she wanted to be a teacher since she was little. Like as early as preschool. Because she loved it so much.
You gotta be a certain kind of person.
You really do. I have so much respect for teachers of all kinds. Whether it's, you know, a preschool teacher or a college professor. It takes a lot of heart. So she definitely had a lot of heart.
She gave a lot of her time, too. She almost always offered extra help after school.
Right. Yeah, she was very good about making sure that her students succeeded, which I think is really important. I was lucky enough to have a teacher like that, a math teacher specifically, when I was a senior in high school, who, you know, I would go to every after-school session, and I would ask questions, and I paid attention, and I suck at math, guys. But because he saw me trying and, like, really putting effort in, he passed me when he should not have passed me. So I feel like Colleen Ritzer was, she was that kind of person who her students' success was more important than anything else. So she seemed like such a lovely girl. And you see these pictures of her and you're like, look at her smile.
What a sweetie. Like she really connected with kids. So many kids are a huge fan of her.
Yeah, she was such a great person.
And she was also going back to school to get her master's on top of teaching full time.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's no joke. She did such a good job. Honestly, again, anyone who goes to college while working full-time, how do you do it? Heroes. I work full-time and I can't even, like, wake up and stay awake for more than a few hours. Like, I'm so tired. And so anyone who does that, props to them.
It's, yeah.
And she was 24, so she was very young and she was just active in her community and, like, just such a good person. Big family girl. Mm-hmm. Loved her family. Was very close with her. She had two younger siblings. And she had, you know, her parents. She seemed like a very wonderful person. So that's why talking about this is very hard, I think, even just from an outsider's perspective. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about October 22nd of 2013. Katie, set the scene for us.
So like you said, Liz, Colleen is 24 at this time. She had actually asked one of her students, 14-year-old Philip Chisholm, to stay after class. He had recently moved to Massachusetts. He was living originally in Clarksville, Tennessee at the time. He had only been at the school about a month. You know, other kids said that he was very shy, kind of withdrawn, but it seemed to Colleen, at least, like maybe he would open up a little bit more if he just had someone to talk to.
Yeah.
So she asked him to stay after class. She started talking to him about Tennessee.
Yeah.
And about his town back home and if he liked it here, how he was adjusting, how he liked the school.
Right.
And there was actually another student in the class that had stayed behind as well for some extra help, just to kind of hang out and talk to Colleen some more.
Yeah.
And she said that as soon as Colleen brought up the subject of Tennessee, Philip, his whole mood completely changed. It was like a cloud came over his face.
Yeah, like she was being, the student said that Colleen was being very polite. You know, Philip was responding and it seemed like just a casual, friendly conversation. And then when Tennessee was mentioned, like you said, complete change. And this student noticed that. So that's how like severe the change was. And then at this point, Colleen left the room to go copy some papers, and while she was gone, the student said that Philip came over to her, and they were pretty much, like, near the whiteboard, and Philip was, like, very tall compared to this student, and she said she remembers he was, like, looming over her just because he was so tall, and that he was kind of weird, like, he just came over and was like, what's your name? I can write it in Chinese. And so he wrote her name in Chinese on the whiteboard and it was like, okay, that's kind of weird, but whatever. Like just talking while they're waiting for Colleen. And then Colleen comes back and she informs the two students that she, you know, she doesn't have too much time today, but you know, if they need help right now, like let's get it done right now kind of thing. And then she sat at her desk and Philip sat in a desk nearby. At this point, this is when the student the other student left the classroom. Mm-hmm. And then I think this day and age is so good with the whole camera system. I think that's a very important thing to have in schools, out in neighborhoods, in businesses, and it proved to be very effective and important in this case to have CCTV cameras mm-hmm. in the hallways of this school. And it's eerie as fuck.
It shows everything.
Everything.
I mean, it's just crazy. So a little bit before 3 p.m., Colleen then left the classroom again to use the bathroom. Mm-hmm. You can see her on the CCTV cameras talking to the student, the other student that was in the room with the two,
yeah.
Philip and Colleen. They were talking a little bit in the hallway, and then you see Colleen go down the hallway to go use the bathroom.
Yep. Yeah.
Then you see Philip.
Yes. It's like very shortly after she leaves to go to mm-hmm. the bathroom. Like enough where like maybe she's just far enough down the hall that she doesn't notice that he's like behind her.
Yeah.
It's very eerie.
You see him on camera. He pokes his head out of the doorway. Mm-hmm. He looks down the hall one way, looks down the hall the other way, goes back into the classroom, mm-hmm. and then he comes out with his sweatshirt hood up over his head.
Yes. It's like a blue sweatshirt. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah. And he has darker skin. So with the blue hood kind of over his face, it's very obscuring of his face. Like it's dark and shadowy now. And if we didn't know that he had peeked out of the classroom and then went back in, we wouldn't maybe have known it was Philip because mm-hmm. he was very obscured in the camera footage, which is eerie, very eerie.
You then can see him pulling on a pair of gloves.
Which, where did he get those from?
Right.
Weird.
And then he pulls out a box cutter before walking into the women's bathroom.
Yeah, right behind Colleen.
You then see him come out holding a pair of women's black pants, just like the ones Colleen had been wearing.
Yeah.
You can see one of his hands is covered in blood.
Yeah.
And there's a huge blood stain on one of his pant legs.
Yes, it's very obvious in the footage. Mm-hmm. As far as timing goes, approximately 11 minutes after Philip followed Colleen into the bathroom, another student opened the bathroom door in an attempt to get like a signal on their cell phone. And what she saw only was basically Philip's naked ass. And that's all she saw. And she naturally was like, oh boy. And like immediately closed the door and walked away. Cause I mean, wouldn't you be like, oh, well, okay. Someone's doing something in there.
Yeah. She only had the door open for a split second. Yeah. Saw somebody's naked ass. Yeah. And was like, oh my God, someone must be changing in here.
Right.
And left to go give them privacy.
Exactly. She didn't see blood. She didn't see another person. It was a very quick open the door, see a butt, and then close the door, walk away. Like, okay, I'll try a different place, mm-hmm. you know? And then very soon after that, Philip was seen, like you said, leaving with the blood on his hands. Very obvious on his pant leg as well. It's like soaked on his pants. So pretty soon after Philip left the bathroom, you can see in the video he had taken off his blue sweatshirt, whatever, cleaned up his hand probably, and he came back to the bathroom dragging a green recycling bin. One of those big ones that you know, if you have a lot of recycles, you can wheel out to the curb of your road or whatever.
Like a huge one, like ones that you see, you know, in schools or businesses or even on the side of the road sometimes. Mm-hmm. Big, big, big recycling bin on wheels.
Yeah, so he took that into the bathroom, which if I was an out bystander looking at this, I'd be like, that's bizarre, but okay. And so he took it back into that bathroom. And very soon after that, you can see that Philip left the bathroom, dragging the recycling bin. And this time he was wearing a black ski mask. I don't know where he procured that.
Or why he wasn't wearing it
before. And then he brought the recycling bin outside, where another student noticed him. And they said that it seemed as though he was, like, struggling, like it was heavy to drag that bin.
Jesus.
In the CCTV video of this scene, and oh my God, Katie, it's so disturbing.
So you see him, it's about 3:22 p.m. now, you see him rolling the bin through the school, outside and along the curb to get to the woods.
Yeah.
Someone was walking their dog, and he rolled the bin past them. you can see on camera the dog's head whip around, mm-hmm. and the dog started to run towards the bin to smell it, yeah. and the dog was kind of agitated.
Yeah. And the owner was like, come on, Fluffy. You know, you could tell that they were like, this way, come on.
Right. The owner kind of pulled them, you know,
yeah.
mind your business, yanked the dog and kept walking. But
yeah.
it was really disturbing because the dog definitely knew something was wrong.
Yeah. And so about half an hour later, CCTV footage shows Philip return to the school. He changed his clothes once more, visited his locker, and then the crime scene again. And then he left. He left the school. Ironically, I found this kind of interesting, but it also makes sense. Shortly after this, Philip's parents were worried because he hadn't come home yet. And it was, you know, probably around 4 at this point. School gets out at what, like 2:30 probably? And they were like, this is weird. He hadn't called, he wasn't answering his phone. So they actually filed a missing persons report against Philip because he wasn't home. And he didn't go home after this. Ironically, that same night, a few hours later, Colleen's family made a missing persons report because she hadn't come home.
Mm-hmm.
And that was unlike her, and she wasn't answering the phone. I'm sure you guys can see already where this is going, and you probably have been seeing it for the past 10 minutes. Yeah.
Philip, when he had went into the bathroom after Colleen, he attacked her from behind, so she didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
He had the box cutter, and he stabbed her in the neck about 16 times.
Yeah.
He brutally raped her and then brought her out into the woods. About 20 feet into the woods is where he dumped her. And this was actually only 50 feet from one of their athletic fields. Once he had her in the woods, he raped her with a tree branch. You know, there is speculation as to whether or not she was alive when she was in the recycling bin.
Yeah.
Or she was alive when she was in the woods during this really brutal act.
Mm-hmm.
It seems as though he slit her throat in the woods. This seems to be what killed her.
Mm-hmm. Like a final
cut.
Because he definitely injured her and cut her in the bathroom.
Really, really bad. I mean, there was blood everywhere.
Oh my God. Yeah. But no one can really tell when exactly she was killed.
Mm-hmm.
Or when she took her last breath. So, hours after Philip was reported missing, later that night, around midnight, he was found. Katie, do you want to talk about in between the time of when he left the school and when he was found, what that fucker was doing?
Oh, it sounds like he had a great day.
Oh, it did. Good for him.
He gets changed. What kills me is that he brought all of these things with him. He brought a change of clothes with him to school.
Yeah.
So he changed into those. Yep. He then had taken Colleen's credit cards and got himself a nice little late lunch at Wendy's. He then took himself to a movie, which he also paid for on Colleen's credit cards. And this was actually at a movie theater by his house in Danvers, Massachusetts. And then he still isn't answering his phone.
Right.
His mom is like, where the fuck is my kid? He never does this. Where the fuck is my kid?
Yeah. And he's just walking and doing his own thing with Colleen's credit cards.
Mm-hmm. Finishes his movie.
Oh.
His little tummy's full of Wendy's.
Yeah, he bought a drink at BJ's. Yum.
And he decides to start walking home. And they find him walking along the side of the highway in Topsfield, Massachusetts, which is just a town over, a little after midnight, like you said.
Great.
So police are like, hello there, young man.
What are you up to?
What's going on?
At this point, the police did not know that Colleen was dead.
Mm-hmm.
They had not found her body. Yes, there was a missing person report about her, but they hadn't found her, and they had no reason to suspect Philip was involved. This was just two isolated, very tragic and weird situations. Two missing people from the same school. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, you know, they stop him, and then they look in his backpack. And what do they fucking find?
First, they notice a box cutter
that
is covered in blood.
Huh.
So this prompts them to do a further search.
Yeah.
They find a bloody blue hooded sweatshirt, bloody gloves, credit cards and a driver's license belonging to Colleen Ritzer, and a pair of blue-green underwear that was later determined to be Colleen's.
Yeah. So obviously, if you're the police officer and you're standing there on the side of the highway or whatever with this 14-year-old boy thinking, whew, we found him, and then you look through his bag and you find all of that, you're going to be like, well, shit. This is not good. And now they had a suspect and a reason to believe that Colleen was either seriously hurt or dead. And this prompted them to go to back to the school and look at the CCTV footage. And that's when they saw everything.
Philip, on the side of the road, they're obviously asking him. They're like, where did you get all of this? What happened? Where did this come from?
Yeah. Why?
He is trying to tell officers that he found everything just sitting in a gas station.
Wow.
Just in a neat little pile at a gas station for him to come across. And they're like, yeah, okay. Like,
right.
We don't buy that at all. Mm-mm. And then he starts, as most guilty people do, digging themselves into a hole.
Yeah.
He starts giving some more details, and he later said that he took them out of Colleen's car.
Okay.
Which we all know that's not true.
Right.
And then police still aren't buying it, because who leaves their credit cards, their license,
a pair of panties,
a pair of underwear.
Come on.
And bloody things. The blue sweatshirt obviously does not belong to Colleen Ritzer.
Right. It was like an Aeropostale. Like,
it was for a teenage boy. Yeah. Like, you could obviously... Yeah. Right. And so then police are like, yeah, okay, just tell us the truth. And he said, the blood is from the girl.
Oh my God.
And so police are like, yeah, no, he hurt somebody really bad.
Yeah. That's so ridiculous. The girl. That is a woman. She has a name.
Your 24-year-old teacher, dude? Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And so, of course, hours after she was reported missing, police investigators are searching the woods near the school. They saw the CCTV footage, and they're, you know, disturbed and scared and worried. And, you know, they're looking for blood, they're looking for anything, and then in the brush, they discover something out of place. And it's a toe painted with pink nail polish. And they ultimately uncover Colleen Ritzer's body. And it's brutal. She's absolutely, she looks like she's been through it. You know, she was, I don't even have the words. He really did damage to her.
Mm-hmm.
Nearby was the recycling bin. And also, interestingly, a note. A white piece of paper folded up neatly that just said, I hate you all. What the hell?
That's nice.
That's really good. That's...
Maybe go to therapy if you have so much hatred in you.
Come on. Also, interestingly, Colleen was naked from the waist down, and her shirt had been pulled up over her chest, with her bra pulled down to reveal her breasts. So clearly he was trying to humiliate her. This is not a pose if you had remorse, which we've heard with some serial killers, they do that. No, no. He wanted the world to see her and make her embarrassed or just humiliate her, which is so disturbing and so sadistic. It's terrible. So what's really interesting is that, you know, with the CCTV footage, the police were obviously brought to the bathroom where they believed it occurred, and they didn't find any blood. And they were like, okay, maybe we're wrong. But what they found out was that there was a man named Vinicio Pimentel, who earlier in the day, he was a cleaning supervisor. He had come upon the bloody scene. And he said it looked like a slaughterhouse. So he went to the custodian, Danny Marshall, and told him in his best English, because he did not speak English as a first language. He spoke Spanish, and it's a very, he spoke a very poor English. He told Danny Marshall, I found blood in the women's bathroom on the second floor. And so Danny Marshall thought that Pimentel was saying, I found blue on the bathroom floor. And so Danny, thinking this was a whole bunch of spilled, like, cleaner, told Pimentel to just go clean it up. And because of the language barrier, Pimentel was like, okay, you know, he got his orders. And so he went and he cleaned it up. He said it took about 45 minutes. It took a hose, a squeegee, and a floor cleaning machine to get all the blood up. However, and this was used later in the trial, blood had ended up inside the floor cleaning machine, and it had soaked its wheels, so there was traces of it in the machine. And they had also found blood on the sides of the toilet, between the hand dryer and electrical outlet, and they also found a diamond stud earring in the cleaning machine, mm-hmm. which was, it belonged to Colleen Ritzer.
That's crazy that that happened.
Yeah, just because of a, you know, a simple language barrier, and mm-hmm. I don't know, I don't blame Pimentel, but man.
It just sucks.
That sucks. That sucks.
Another thing that I thought was crazy, so obviously they arrested Philip.
Yeah.
While he was waiting for his trial, he was at a youth detention facility in Boston. Mm-hmm. In June of 2014, he committed a really disturbing attack that could have been very similar to Colleen's. Mm. He followed a 29-year-old female staff member into the locker room after checking to make sure no one else was around.
Oh my God.
He took off his shoes so he wouldn't make any noise, so he could sneak up behind her. And he came up behind her, pushed her up against a wall, and choked her while stabbing her with a pencil.
Oh my.
And beating her.
Holy shit.
Another staff member heard the commotion, mm-hmm. heard her screaming, heard, you know, the struggle, and ran in to help, which saved the woman's life.
Wow.
She is still anonymous. You can't really find out who she is.
Good.
But she suffered injuries to her back, her face, her jaw, and her neck. And she was out of work for a very long time.
I'm sure.
She's very traumatized.
Yeah. That's terrible.
It easily could have gone the way that Colleen's murder did.
Very easily.
The same approach.
Sneaking up, taking off his shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
And that shows premeditation too.
Absolutely it does.
Yep. So for this attack, he faced separate charges of attempted murder, assault, and battery with a dangerous weapon, kidnapping, and assault with intent to murder.
Mm. Wow.
Because this was a different incident, they, you know, the prosecution wanted to use this mm-hmm. in Colleen's trial, but they couldn't because it was two completely separate things.
Right.
But it would have been really helpful if the prosecution could have used this, like,
yeah.
Hello, he just did the same thing he did to Colleen.
Yeah, this was like 8 months later.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's 14, guys. Right.
He didn't learn his lesson. He's doing the same thing with the same approach again.
Yeah.
Maybe this guy shouldn't be hanging out in society where he can sneak up behind women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you hear about it all the time. Men sneaking up behind women on the street, left, yeah. right, and center.
Yeah.
Ugh, it's just crazy.
Totally screwed up.
Yeah.
And this is all while he's waiting for trial.
He's in a juvenile detention facility. Like, it's, yeah. not like...
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Yeah. 14. The trial didn't end up happening until Philip had turned 16. So it was a few years later. And like I said, I watched very large chunks of it online. And man, was that disturbing. He, the whole time, not a single expression from this, wow. child. And you know what's so funny is that, and I wrote this down because somebody commented it on the YouTube, the one of the videos, and I thought it was so funny because it's so true. They said, he literally does not move the entire time. He blinks because he has to. Yeah. Like, everything else, he's just sitting there. No expression.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. Isn't that gross?
Oh, my God. He's such a sociopath. Like...
Oh, my... And you know what's so funny? Is initially, he claimed he was guilty by reason of insanity. And we've talked about this before.
But of course.
That's not easy to get. And also, he's not insane.
No, I saw that too, and I guess the defense was like, oh, yeah, 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 perfect. Yeah, you're insane. Tell them you're hearing voices.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So that's what he said, is like, I heard voices telling me to kill her.
No,
the fuck you didn't, bro. This was completely premeditated. The detectives are convinced it was premeditated. The detectives are saying he showed up to school.
Yeah.
At the start of the school day,
mm-hmm.
with everything he needed. The ski mask, a change of clothes.
The gloves.
Yeah. The box cutter. The fact that he poked his head out in the hallway to make sure no one else was around before, mm-hmm. following her to the bathroom.
That's enough premeditation. Like, that, mm-hmm. counts.
And he could have, I know that he was encouraged to stay after school.
Right.
Colleen gave him the option, you know, you don't have to, but it would be a good idea if you stayed after, mm-hmm. school. You don't have to, though, if you have stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that too was planned. Yeah. Him staying alone after school and getting her alone in the classroom where he knew it wasn't going to be during active school hours.
Right.
And that nobody would be around.
He's so evil.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about what the forensic pathologist found. Because I was just listening to her testimony. She was, of course, examined and cross-examined by both defense and prosecution. Prosecution questioned her first, and I hate to say it, but his defense team was kind of dumb. Because every question they, like, asked this woman, she was like, you could tell she was like, you guys are kidding, right? Like, you're so dumb. So this is what she had to say about what she found with Colleen's body. She said she had an abrasion under her right jaw. She had a bruise above her left breast and on her upper right abdomen. She had two bruises on her right elbow, and she also had petechiae on her face. Now, petechiae is little tiny blood vessels that pop. So you have little tiny dots of, like, red, like little tiny bruising, and it happens when people are strangled. You'll see it in, like, their eyes and their eyelids, because you're, you know, strangling them so hard that blood vessels are popping above the area where you are being strangled, to put it lightly. So she had petechiae on her face, and according to the forensic pathologist, she said that it was kind of hard to determine if this was due to the deep lacerations on her neck or because she was strangled. To the neck, there were 12 stab wounds and 4 incised wounds, meaning that they were longer rather than deep. So the 12 stab wounds were, like, deep, very into her neck,
mm-hmm.
and the incised were more just, like, the length of it was prominent. She said her internal jugular vein was cut, meaning she bled out,
wow.
As well as her external jugular veins and her carotid artery.
Mm.
So that's basically where all of your blood comes from when you, mm-hmm. to your head. It goes to your head. So he cut basically her blood supply to her head. The carotid artery and the jugular veins are getting blood right from every time your heart pumps. So you can imagine getting that cut, you're going to bleed out and fast. Very fast. Her trachea was also damaged, as well as her esophagus, going as deep as her vertebrae. So he cut her and sliced her so deep that basically the cuts went down to the very back of her neck. I know. I was listening to this.
Jesus Christ.
I felt so sick for this poor woman and her poor family. Her family was in this courtroom listening.
Mm.
And Philip's family was there too. And I read it in the comments and stuff. His mom was just weeping.
She was so upset.
Oh, so upset and felt so terrible that her son did this terrible, terrible thing. So also the fact that he cut through her trachea, which Katie, you and I know is cartilage. So he really had to, in very unfortunate terms, saw at her neck. Unfortunately, there was also a laceration at the opening of her vagina, as well as some hemorrhaging inside the vagina.
Jesus.
Yeah, which indicated to the forensic pathologist that this was likely caused either as she was dying or very shortly after she died. And this would be where you mentioned Philip sexually assaulted her with a tree branch. Her official cause of death was sharp force injuries to the neck and asphyxia by strangulation.
Mm.
I know that was absolutely terrible, guys, but I think it's so important to say that this is what this 14-year-old child did to his teacher.
And he planned this.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, you have people still arguing, oh, he was mentally ill. He underwent a really rough transition when he moved.
Oh.
His parents' divorce was so hard for him. He was so upset. I'm sorry. I know a lot of people that have underwent very traumatic moves, very traumatic divorces.
Yeah.
That are in therapy, that are on, like, medication.
Yeah.
They don't go around stabbing their math teacher.
You don't personally know anyone that's murdered their teacher? Wow. What about your friend who the parents, they divorced and it was so
What about my parents? Yeah. You don't see me running around, like, right. Sneaking up behind women on the street with a box cutter or a pencil. Like,
exactly.
Give me strength.
There's no excuse.
And he underwent mental psychiatric testing.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the tests he underwent were supposed to help determine whether or not he was exaggerating symptoms of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
His test results showed that he was basically making up symptoms.
Oh my god.
To make himself seem much more mentally ill than he actually was.
That doesn't surprise me.
Granted, I'm sure he had depression.
Sure.
I'm sure he was, you know, traumatized or at least unhappy by his parents' divorce, the move.
Mm-hmm.
Moving sucks.
It does suck.
It's hard. Starting a new school, it's hard.
Yep.
High school,
oh, it's
that
terrible.
Sucks.
Yeah, it does suck.
You know what? No fucking excuse.
Yeah, you can cope in other ways, sir.
And the fact that he's like, I'm hearing voices and they told me to kill her.
Bullshit.
Shut the fuck up. Like, that's not how it works.
Yeah, that's absolute bullshit.
Ugh.
He's a psychopath.
Yeah.
He's really a psychopath.
Truly. Yeah. No remorse, no emotion even.
In that trial, oh my god, it was so creepy. And it's crazy too because they brought up so many witnesses and a ton of them were his classmates, his friend's mom, like teachers, everything under the sun, and he still had no emotion. It was crazy. I listened to some of these kids testify against him and it was like, good for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
These are 15, 16 year old kids. And also, this made me so angry, just being an outsider reading the story. It came out during the trial that when Philip was initially caught, he claimed that it was Colleen's fault for her own death.
Mm-hmm. Oh!
Uh-huh. He said she's responsible for her own death. So clearly he's a psychopath.
How does that work? She didn't take the box cutter from him and do it to herself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you...
Ooh.
So many questions. And it's so funny because clearly Philip's defense team was grasping at straws.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god.
Of course.
Because, I mean, he did a terrible, terrible thing. He's not mentally ill. He's completely competent to stand trial. So this is like, the defense team, they know that he's guilty as hell, I'm
mm-hmm.
sure. And they're struggling. They basically claimed that the police already knew Colleen was dead when they found Chisholm walking along Route 1. And they had no legal jurisdiction to go through his backpack and much less stop and frisk him, right? The prosecutors immediately were like, well, that's bullshit, because at that point they had no idea whether Colleen was dead or alive. She was still a missing person. So the prosecutors also were like, the police had no reason to suspect him until they found that footage in the school, which they found after they caught Philip walking. So that was bullshit. And the prosecutors were like, nice try. That's a really shitty defense. Sorry, you suck. This kid's going down. And another point was made that whether or not if Philip understood what it meant to waive his rights to remain silent, that was what the defense team was saying. And that's, I think, fair in a sense, because he's 14. Maybe he doesn't understand like the weight of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
However, prosecutors proved that this point was inadequate because immediately after that, he asked for a lawyer. So he did have the presence of mind to understand that he needed a lawyer. So.
He also had the presence of mind to lie about where he got the things he got in his bag.
That's right. That's right.
Here he is spending Colleen's credit cards.
Yeah.
On Wendy's and a movie and a little drinky poo at BJ's.
Wendy's isn't even good.
Give me strength and patience.
It's so fucked up.
You know what else is fucked up?
Mm-hmm.
His sentence.
I would agree with you on that one.
So, in Massachusetts, anyone 14 years old or older charged with murder or a second felony is tried as an adult. So in 2015, Philip Chisholm was found guilty of the rape and murder of Colleen Ritzer. He was sentenced in early 2016 to 40 to 60 years with the possibility of parole.
Philip is eligible for parole after 40 years into his sentence, which is when he's only 54 years old, which is, I hate to say it, still pretty young.
I think a 54-year-old is very capable of sneaking up behind another woman in the future and doing the same thing.
I think you're right about
that. Because he clearly is showing intent. Yes. That he likes to do this.
And he did it again.
Yes.
While he was in juvenile detention. I think that says a lot.
What kills me is that, so the prosecution was also trying to add years on to this sentence for the second rape with the tree branch.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually acquitted of this rape charge. There was enough speculation as to whether or not Colleen was alive during that.
Yeah. Which doesn't matter.
Right. But fun fact, in the state of Massachusetts, which I think is so fucked up.
Oh no.
There are no laws against the abuse of a corpse.
Seriously?
Which is why he was acquitted for this charge, because they determined that Colleen had passed away before he did that to her.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. So he was acquitted.
That has to change. That has to change. Isn't that terrible?
And imagine her family in the courtroom hearing this, mm-mm, knowing exactly what he did, mm-mm, and having people argue back and forth about whether or not she was dead when he did that to her. And if she was dead,
mm-hmm,
he gets off of that charge.
That's awful.
Mm-hmm.
Her poor family listening to that.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, that's so messed up.
40 years and he's out for parole.
God, I hope they're going to deny him every time.
I hope they better.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy?
That's insane.
This poor
woman.
Her poor family. I mean, Peggy and Tom Ritzer, Colleen's parents,
mm-hmm,
they ended up filing a wrongful death suit against the town of Danvers, as well as the Danvers Public School,
mm-hmm,
the cleaning company.
Oh.
And they also filed a suit against another company that helped with the expansion in the school.
Oh.
So because this company came in and was expanding the school,
mm-hmm,
they had messed up the security system.
Oh.
So there were parts of the camera footage that didn't pick up on other things, like Philip going into the locker room,
yeah,
or at what point he changed out of his bloody clothes, or
right,
at what point he washed his hands, or his journey through the school with her body in the recycling bin.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
That's so sad.
It's just ridiculous.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, her family, I think that suit is still pending. I'm, mm-hmm, not entirely sure.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all very recent. I would say.
I
was so surprised that this was, it's still going on.
Of course, yeah. And do you remember when it happened?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too. I mean, mostly because, like, in our hometowns, we would get the Boston News Channel, whatever. So as soon as that happened, it was everywhere. And,
mm-hmm,
it was so, so sad. And I remember thinking about it for a long time afterwards. Terrible stuff.
Yeah. And this is one that got national and even international attention.
Absolutely. Especially because of the haunting, mm-hmm, CCTV footage. Not only of the dog, you know, picking up on it, but him pulling and, but him pushing the recycling bin, knowing that she's in there.
And he comes out holding her pants covered in blood.
Oh my
you see
God.
Him on the camera pulling on gloves and pulling out the box cutter.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's awful.
Yeah.
A very sad case for your True Crime Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Man, it's a deep one, but it is very interesting. And I find that I do like talking about and watching court videos. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get any more true facts than from a court case, like watching it live. So that was interesting.
Some of them are so crazy to watch, like the Mont Vernon thrill killing with those two boys.
The evil.
Same thing. No remorse, no emotion, no nothing.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's ridiculous.
Crazy.
I can't even stand it. So if you guys want to tell us your thoughts on this awful case, please do so. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at TrueCrimeNE.
All lowercase.
Or you can send us an email at our email address, truecrimene@gmail.com.
You can also find us at our website, truecrimene.com. You can even use our handy-dandy submission tool. You can send us in questions, comments, concerns, nice things.
Nice thoughts.
And also, especially, pretty please, case suggestions for us to cover.
Yes, we would love that.
Based in New England, obviously.
Thank
but,
you.
You know.
It's in the title, guys. Come on.
And also, if you could pretty please leave us a rating and or a review on Spotify and or Apple Podcasts, we would be so grateful.
Oh, so grateful. we'll send you a bouquet of flowers right to your doorstep. Or if you prefer the edible arrangements, we can do that too. We love when you guys give us reviews. Honest. It's very appreciated, mm-hmm. and it helps us, and we just want to get our podcast out there, and you guys help us in more ways than you could ever know. So keep it up, keep reviewing, keep rating, and we appreciate you.
Yeah, damn right.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.